London Calling. London Walks Connecting. This is London. This is London Walks. Streets ahead. Story time. History time. Good evening, London. It's May 3rd, 2024. Today's pin, a touch of yesteryear that's still going strong. I'm talking about voting in the UK. Yesterday was election day. Well, the 2024 United Kingdom local elections. Elections to choose some 2,600 councillors on 107 councils in England, and 11 directly elected mayors in England, including London, of course, and the 25 members of the London Assembly, and 37 police and crime commissioners in England and Wales. My local polling station is just round the corner, in our little local community centre. The polls were open from 7 in the morning until 10 at night. And here's what I really like about it. It's done in the tried, traditional, old-fashioned way. Paper ballots. You put an X in the box by the name of the candidate you're voting for. You fold your ballot and drop it in the ballot box. And then the votes get counted by hand. I don't mean to be paranoid or anything, but I don't entirely trust electronic voting machines. Paper ballots sorted and counted by hand by lots of volunteers, all of that done semi-publicly, it seems to me that's almost 100% proof against somebody trying to cook the books, rig it, fiddle the outcome. Electronic voting machines, surely, they can be got at. A little programming hocus-pocus and, well, you've got a bent election. There were 13 candidates running for mayor. My favorite, apart from the individual I voted for, was the spoof candidate, Count Binface. And sure enough, his logo was a bin. A candidate who wasn't spoofing was the No to Immigration hopeful. A city of immigrants, my guess is his seed will have fallen on parched, barren ground. But we'll see. And a goodly range of parties and independents for the London Assembly. In addition to the big three, I mean, the Conservatives, the Labour Party, and the Liberal Democrats, there was the Animal Welfare Party, and the Christian People's Alliance, and the Communist Party of Britain, and the Heritage Party. Wonder who they are and what they're about. And the Rejoin EU Party, and one called Britain First, and cut from the same cloth, I suspect, a party called Reform UK, London Deserves Better, and the Social Democratic Party, and the Green Party, of course. All of them no-hopers, but you have to admire their public-spiritedness. Anyway, come tomorrow, all those paper ballots will have been tallied, and it'll be Step Forward winners. Moving on, today's random. One of the stops on my old Westminster walk, which I guided yesterday, is the Lord North Street house where Anthony Eden lived when he was first a Member of Parliament. And of course, Anthony Eden will be forever associated with the Suez debacle. In the words of Deputy Cabinet Secretary Burke Trend, Suez was the psychological watershed, the moment when it became apparent that Britain was no longer capable of being a great imperial power. Now, earlier on that walk, we'd looked at the house of Mansfield Smith Cumming, the first chief of the British Secret Service, who, famously, signed off his communications to his underlings in green ink with the letter C. And I made the point that James Bond's boss was known as and signed off his communications with the letter M, which was the nickname of Ian Fleming's, Bond's creator, the nickname of Ian Fleming's mother. And since it's all about making connections, when we got to the Anthony Eden house, I threw another faggot on the blaze. I mentioned that, shaken as he was by the Suez debacle, Eden retreated to Jamaica, specifically to Goldeneye, Ian Fleming's house. In other words, the house where James Bond was born was the last refuge for those still in denial about Britain's place in the world. In any event, the 3 weeks that Eden beat a retreat to Goldeneye was sufficient time for his opponents to get themselves organized and unseat him. Anyway, that's all by the by. In the meantime, at Goldeneye, we can rest assured that the Prime Minister's host, James Bond's creator, and his guest knocked back more than a few drinky-poos during the Prime Minister's R&R. And as everybody knows, James Bond wants his favorite drink, a martini cocktail, vodka martini, shaken, not stirred. So the connection, however tenuous, is there. But if we're going to shake that connection, not stir it, get it properly random, I think the time has come to count drinks. So while votes are being counted, let's get a second count going. We know generally that James Bond drank like a fish. Let's quantify. The British Medical Journal, in their Christmas edition, back in 2013, God rest those merry gentlemen, the British Medical Journal reported that across the entire run of James Bond novels, 007 drinks an average of 92 units of alcohol a week. That bears repeating, 92 units a week. You could say just slightly over the recommended 14 units a week. British slang, at its most graphic, would say, what a piss artist. And it's not just the fluids. 007 takes a puff or two as well. In Casino Royale, Ian Fleming describes Bond as smoking his 70th cigarette of the day. Well, I think we better come up for some air, make our excuses, and get shot of Bond, James Bond. Head to Today's Ongoing, where the fun is much healthier. Anne's Cattails Walk, London's feline history, is coming up in a couple of weeks. And, as always, I'm purring with satisfaction and delight. Because, by way of a trailer, Anne's come up with another one of her delightful Cattails podcast. Here's Anne.
Time for another roundup of cat trivia in the news this month. Do you take your cat for a walk? No, I'm not getting mixed up with those dogs. Walking the cat, as opposed to being on the catwalk, is a new enthusiasm among some cat owners. Enough of them to have a flourishing Facebook group and a whole industry devoted to it. Shop online for leads and for harnesses ranging from what looks like bondage gear to cutesy William Morris pattern fabric ones. The UK Facebook group swaps info about safe places to walk your cat, obviously not in the areas reserved for dog walkers. I was surprised that one recommended place is in my local park, which I shall now go and inspect. The RSPCA was originally anti-cat walking, but has withdrawn its objections. I'm with the letter writer to The Times, who said that having lived with cats for more than 60 years, she'd never known them to do something that they do not want to do. That, she observed, is their charm. The Facebook group has enchanting photos of cats out for a walk in the countryside, climbing up trees, enjoying delicious scents, trotting along at a speed that makes their owners surely not facilitators, run to keep up with them. Another writer to The Times suggested that dogs, frustrated over the years by cats escaping them by nipping up the nearest tree, would now feel that finally there is a level playing field. If you don't want to go for a walk with your cat, how about practicing yoga with it? Yoga with puppies is well established, but I've always thought that they're slightly more biddable than kittens. The reporter who tried this out concluded sadly that she didn't get much attention from the kittens, who seemed far keener on some of the other participants, especially the one who was allergic to cats. Now, there are usually stories in the press about cats who get into strange cars for a snooze, only to wake up at the other end of the country while their distressed owners search for them. A new twist on the travelling cat story emerged this week when one got into a package being returned to an Amazon warehouse 600 miles away. Starting her journey in Salt Lake City, Galina was delivered to Amazon's warehouse in California, where she spent 8 days before being spotted by an employee and rescued. Her owners flew more than 1,000 miles to collect her, apparently none the worse for the trip. Now, if only she had subscribed to Amazon Prime. Can't get enough of cats? You might want to read newly published Catland by historian Catherine Hughes. More than 400 pages devoted to the history of the rise and rise of the cat in 19th and 20th century Britain. No longer a weaselly-faced creature with a ratty tail, tolerated as a rodent operative, but a sleek, well-fed member of the family with a place in front of the parlour fire. I haven't managed all 400 pages yet, but I'm enjoying it so far. I'm sure you are the kind of person who always returns their library books on time, but sadly there is a large contingent who return them late or not at all. A library in the States has announced felines for fee forgiveness. Turn up with your cancelled library card and a photo of a cat, not necessarily your cat, any cat will do, and you will be forgiven. A librarian explained that librarians are always being seen as cat people, so it was nice to be in on the joke. In fact, you will be forgiven if you just come with a drawing of a cat, or lion, or tiger, or any animal you can think of, even a dog. You'll know the saying that when the cows are lying down, it's going to rain, so here's a cat twist. In 1869, Richard Inwood's weather law warned, "When cats sneeze, it is a sign of rain." There must have been a lot of cats sneezing in London recently. If you like hearing about cats, please join me on my Cat Tales Walk on May the 12th. Just book online at London Walks.
You've been listening to This is London, the London Walks podcast, emanating from walks.com, home of London Walks, London's signature walking tour company, London's local, time-honored, fiercely independent, family-owned, just the right size walking tour company. And as long as we're at it, London's multi-award-winning walking tour company. Indeed, London's only award-winning walking tour company. And here's the secret. London Walks is essentially run as a guides cooperative. That's the key to everything. It's the reason we're able to attract and keep the best guides in London. You can get Schlubbers to do this for £20 a walk, but you cannot get world-class guides, let alone accomplished professionals. It's not rocket science. You get what you pay for. And just as surely, you also get what you don't pay for. Back in 1968, when we got started, we quickly came to a fork in the road. We had to answer a searching question. Do we want to make the most money, or do we want to be the best walking tour company in the world? You want to make the most money, you go the Schlubbers route. You want to be the best walking tour company on the planet, you do whatever you have to do to attract and keep the best guides in London. You want them guiding for you, not for somebody else. Bears repeating, the way we're structured, a guides cooperative, is the key to the whole thing. It's the reason for all those awards. It's the reason people who know go with London Walks. It's the reason we've got a big following, a lively, loyal, discerning following. Quality attracts quality. It's the reason we're able, uniquely, to front our walks with accomplished, in many cases, distinguished professionals. By way of example, Stuart Purvis, the former editor and subsequently CEO of Independent Television News, and Lisa Honan, who had a distinguished career as a diplomat. Lisa was the governor of St. Helena, the island where Napoleon breathed his last, and, some say, had his penis amputated. Napoleon didn't feel a thing, if things the mot juste. He was dead. Stuart and Lisa, both of them CBEs, are just a couple of our headline acts. Or take our Ripper Walk. It's the creation of the world's leading expert on Jack the Ripper, Donald Rumbelow, the author of the definitive book on the subject. Britain's most distinguished crime historian, Donald is, in the words of the Jack the Ripper A to Z, internationally recognized as the leading authority on Jack the Ripper. Donald's emeritus now, but he's still the guiding light on our Ripper Walk. He curates the walk, he trains up and mentors our Ripper Walk guides, fields any and all questions they throw at him. The London Walk's aristocracy of talent, its all-star team of guides, includes a former London mayor. It includes the former chief music critic for the Evening Standard. It includes the chair of the Association of Professional Tour Guides and the former chair of the Guild of Guides. It includes barristers, doctors, geologists, museum curators, a former Museum of London archaeologist, historians, university professors, one of them a distinguished Cambridge University paleontologist. It includes criminal defense lawyers, Royal Shakespeare Company and National Theatre actors, a bevy of MVPs, Oscar winners, people who've won the big one, the Guide of the Year Award. Well, you get the idea. As that travel writer famously put it, if this were a golf tournament, every name on the leaderboard would be a London Walk's guide. And as we put it, London Walk's guides make the new familiar, and the familiar new. And on that agreeable note, come then, let us go forward together on some great London walks. And that's by way of saying, good walking and good Londoning, one and all. See you next time.